Welcome to the Gregarious Mammal Podcast, and in this episode I talk to Pierre from Iva about their fascinating AI music composer. For show notes and previous episodes, please visit gregariousmammal.com/podcast, support us at /support, and find us on Facebook to interact with us and ask us questions. Enjoy the show.
Right. So I am Pierre Bureau. I'm a CEO of Iva. And Iva is an artificial intelligence that composes music for soundtracks of films, games, TV shows, trailers, any type of entertainment in general.
And so people might have seen Iva. Well, I suppose it depends what circles you move in, but there was a sort of infamous NVIDIA keynote from last year.
Right.
Some of the games are, I'm not a massive gamer, but any games people might know where they might have heard the music?
So far we haven't done any massive games. Okay. It's actually a vertical that we've started getting interested into just recently. But we've done one recently, which is called Pixel Field. It's an independent game for mobile phones, so Android and iPhone. So not a big game, but it's quite addictive, actually.
Yeah.
And we composed the main theme for this game.
And it looks like, I mean, to me, I suppose one of the very easy use cases would also be probably ads, advertising,
right.
Like especially short pieces of music that people don't pay a massive amount of attention to anyway. It's probably a very good use case for you.
Right. Yeah, it is a very good use case. I mean, both games and advertisement, because yeah. Usually these type of content are they have short deadlines, especially for advertisements. They do have some level of quality requirements, but maybe they don't need to record the music with a real orchestra. I mean, it depends for games, but you know, not everybody can pay themselves a full orchestra. So yeah, it's definitely those type of clients are very inclined to buy music for us. Also, actually, in the game business, it's very interesting because games nowadays start to have hundreds of hours of gameplay, but only 2 hours of music. Mm. So it means essentially the same music loops 50 times over, which can be painful for the gamers. And but at the same time, no human composer in the world can actually compose hundreds of hours of music, right?
No.
So it's interesting to see AI going into use cases where human alone are not enough. And it's kind of nice because you could imagine having this AI take the existing work of the composer, so the 2 hours of music, and then make it feel like 100. So essentially compose additional music, arrange the 2 hours of music. So yeah, it's kind of important for us to say that, because it means that, you know, AI does the things it is best at, and then the humans are still very relevant into setting the sort of creative direction, artistic decision, and so forth.
But this is actually, so I'm interested to know, because your website doesn't say a great deal about what actually happens. So there's a couple of examples. You have one video from the Luxembourg National Day with an orchestra playing a piece, and then you talk about games and soundtracks. But so what does Iva actually generate? Does it generate score or MIDI score that then can be played by something else, be that a real orchestra or be that a MIDI generator or whatever it may be? What does it actually generate?
So the AI is a composer, so it does generate a MIDI. It learns from scores, so encoded in the MIDI format, scores of music, and then the output is a score itself. And the idea for that is to be flexible to either record with digital instruments, so virtual instruments, which nowadays can be very convincing in terms of quality. And then at the same time, we also have, because it's a score, we have the flexibility to record with real people, real musicians. Mm. And yeah, generating audio with AI is a much harder problem that we're not very interested in solving, at least for now.
Yeah, I imagine, because I was fascinated, especially watching the orchestra example, where, you know, in an orchestra you often have multiple people playing the same instrument. Traditionally for volume, but also for sort of subtlety and things like that. And I was sort of wondering, yeah, how you would replicate something like that digitally. That's why I was interested to know quite what gets generated. And then I suppose that means how you can generate gameplay, because you can feed various inputs into the generation. And in some respects, each game could almost be different as well in terms of the soundtrack.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, nowadays you see evolving stories based on conscious or unconscious decisions of the gamers. Mm. So, you know, if a gamer decides to do a particular thing or talk to another character in a specific manner, it might affect the story in a significant way. Mm. So it makes sense that the music could also evolve depending on all of these different scenarios made possible by the player. So it's very interesting to have MIDI, because you can do the score essentially with AI. Yeah. And then you also have the ability to record it with a digital instrument to make it scalable for the games. But at the same time, if you want to do other use cases like record with the orchestra that you saw on YouTube, then it's also possible.
And it would keep the file size very small. It wouldn't add much overhead to the game at all. The AI is just, in quote marks, code. And then the MIDI is MIDI, which is also very small in terms of file size. And you have these sort of infinite variations of music without very little impact on the actual size of the tool. Yeah, it's quite interesting. How did you come up with the idea in the first place? What motivated the company to start and do this?
Right. Well, first of all, we're all musicians in the team. Mm. Also, we're all very passionate about technology. Personally, I'm from a family of musicians and artists. Mm. So my father is a film and music producer. My mother sings. She was a singer. So always had this passion for music, technology, also for movies and creative contents. So I co-directed the documentary when I was 15 years old with my dad. Mm-hmm. So all that sort of led to understanding that in the entertainment business, when music is created for entertainment as a soundtrack, there are artistic decisions, but there are also a lot of constraints. You do have to answer to your clients, and sometimes composers have to make a music that they wouldn't necessarily want to make, but they have to make because that's what the director wants, and that's what the story requires. And so with these constraints in mind, we thought that it would be interesting to have an AI do the dirty work of creating music for these constraints, and giving hopefully more room for creators like composers to focus on the artistic decisions and the decisions that are more fulfilling.
Mm. I mean, it's actually, I used to be a musician as well. I played in kind of a British sort of rock band in the early 2000s. And it's actually one other aspect. I don't know if this is something you've thought of. I don't know if there's a very big, well, there's certainly not a big market for rock bands, but maybe for composers and things. But actually, I guess more of a sort of self-serve version of the AI, where a musician can, you know, to alleviate writer's block, to get some inspiration to start a piece and then finish it off themselves, or maybe use the whole thing. Okay, I don't know if you want to start charging royalties, but yeah, as a sort of inspiration point. And I guess you have programs like GarageBand and stuff that do this a little bit, but to a certain point they do it at the moment.
Right. Yeah. No. We definitely thought of that, and I think what we want to be able to do before is to have the AI sort of respond to additional types of data, like pieces of text, images, ways for people to interact with the AI and tell it what to do without necessarily, having musical knowledge, so as to give everybody a chance to be able to create music. Mm. And it sort of relates to our more specific goals in the B2B industry of, generating music for games. Here, you actually have to take text, scripts, images as a conditional input to make sure that the music you generate is actually fitting the content you're scoring. So I think in the future, we're on like set on a roadmap for that, but I think in the future we'll definitely see that kind of tool because that's kind of how humans already do their work of composing music. They listen to other people's work and they get inspired from it, sometimes that leads to confusions like plagiarism problems. So yeah, having an AI that creates a lot of different things and can inspire people without those problems, that certainly could be great.
You actually said something quite fascinating there in passing about feeding in a script. How do you feed in inspirations into Ivor? Like, what form can they take, and how flexible is that?
Right. So right now it's mostly music data. So for example, if a client says, "I want a music in this style, I want a track in the style of John Williams or Beethoven or one of these composers," then we can tell the AI to look at specific styles and then try to generate music that is close to that style. Going forward, what we're interested in doing is having some kind of module in our AI that can extract thematics and emotion from, let's say, a piece of text. Maybe it's a character description. If you consider a character, you can maybe understand their persona, understand their past, their general mood, and that can then be translated into music. I mean, that's what John Williams did very successfully, I think, with the Imperial March for the Star Wars soundtrack. Mm-hmm. The music recaps very well the character that this theme represents. Mm-hmm. And its moods and related atmosphere. So it's a sort of similar thing that we want to do here. And then once your AI is able to understand data like text, essentially there's a lot of solutions existing out there that can translate, for example, videos to text or images to text. So it's text is almost like an interface to everything else. So then you can condition the algorithm on potentially on images and videos.
Yeah, I mean, it starts to get quite fascinating the sorts of inputs you could take. I mean, you'd have to sort of balance off the different inputs because, if someone said, "I want a song that sounds like this," but then you feed in the script and in a sort of AI's mind, they don't necessarily match. You could end up with quite a sort of cacophony in some respects. I mean, it's like the John Williams example is a good one, but there's plenty of times where the music doesn't necessarily match what's going on. And yeah, that works really, really well in certain cases.
So. And I think for those cases, what's really important is almost the human decision of what music to, because essentially AI is here just to reduce the time to remove a writer's block. But it's not at the end of the day, it's not going to remove the genius of a composer or director saying, "Well, actually, I want the music to be completely opposite to what's on the pictures, so as to fool the audience into thinking something else." All these creative decisions and intentions almost will still be carried out by humans. But what AI can do is just generate a lot of different things to help those content creators.
I think that's kind of what we hope that AI will be. It'll be a tool for humans to use, much like every other tool we've ever created, and not a replacement. Right. But that remains to be seen. That's what we hope. But as musicians, the aspect that someone still has to play it, unless it's a game or something, is nice. But when let's get to the output then. So you feed in this input at the moment, and then what happens? Like, is it just fairly generative based on analysis, or have you actually somehow taught the AI like theory of music, or you know, how does it generate something?
So essentially, it reads 15,000 pieces of music. So music written by Mozart, Beethoven, Bach, all the great composers. And by reading all this music, it basically makes an understanding of music theory rules. And it practices with a set of tasks. For example, one of the tasks could be predicting from a few bars of music, predicting what notes will come next in the track. And by predicting the right notes that come next, it's able to tweak its model and perfect its model of understanding of what music theory is. And once it got this model of music theory, it can create totally original pieces, just like a human composer would.
It's interesting. So one other area I'm quite interested in is board games. And obviously there's been two very famous AIs that have played very specific games, so chess and Go.
Right.
And I was reading early last year or late in 2016 that one of the next steps here was to try and make like a general game engine that it doesn't have to – the AI doesn't have to have a knowledge of hundreds of thousands of potential moves in previous games. You can just feed it the rules and it then can learn how to play that game from zero. And I guess in some respects, the way you describe it, Ivo, is working at the moment is that sort of, in quote marks, older version of AI. But do you ever foresee a time, especially if you're going to feed in things like scripts or characters or plot, where instead it's the other way around? It's like, well, it has a concept of the theory of music, Western music, Eastern music, whatever. And here's the script and the characters. Here's some words to describe feeling. Go. And it doesn't analyze anything, it just works with those inputs. I mean, is that something you could think would ever be possible in the near future? Or
so essentially the main thing with AIs trained on board games is that they're using slightly different strategies that we call I forgot the name.
Is it the adversarial?
It's not adversarial training. It's reinforcement learning.
Okay.
There you go. And essentially, with reinforcement learning, just a very, very high level description is that you get a reward for completing a task. So, for example, if you win the game, then you can consider that as a good reward, as a positive reward. So then you can improve by following this. This reward, but in music, it's kind of really hard to say, you know, this is the good outcome or this is the bad outcome. It's very subjective. So that's why for now, you know, board games are more able to be unsupervised, so not training with as much data or with no data at all. For example, in the case of AlphaGo. But with music, we have this problem of having this sort of, good or bad metric. And that's actually something that we're working on. We're working on being able to evaluate the music generated by AI automatically. So essentially doing what a human's music ear would do, listen to a piece and say, okay, this sounds good. And this doesn't sound so good. Obviously, the human ear is quite subjective. So here, what we want to do is give a score that indicates really the minimum amount of quality that's needed to pass so that a track can pass as human made. And once you have that, well, you could potentially say, well, if you give some basic rules to this network and you give it a metric that can tell it whether or not what it created sounds human, then potentially you could have some more unsupervised ways of training the algorithm, but it's slightly more complex than with games, because games are very well defined.
But actually the one other interesting aspect I was reading was that at the moment, games like chess or AlphaGo have one winner, one loser. That's reasonably easy to equate. But then the sort of more Euro-style games, where maybe you have four players and you have variances in winning and losing, has the same sort of problem. It's not so cut and dry. It's not so clear about who wins, who loses.
You
could win with 1 point. You could win with 50 points. It's still less objective than music, of course, but
I think for sure, like it's more challenging, for example, to take a 3D computer game and try to automate that the game with AI. But still, you know, you have an outcome even for us humans. You know, the only reason why we play games is because at the end it says, oh, you won the game or you lost the game. And even if it's a tight one, it's still you won the game. So. Yeah. If you reduce the sort of problem of subjectivity in music to an objective problem of trying to measure what is the minimum amount of quality that you need to have a music that passes as human made music, then potentially you could have a win or lose situation where it's only a binary decision. It's either you're human made or you're just gibberish made by a machine. So potentially there could be unsupervised ways of training the algorithms, but that's we'll see in the future. I think there's plenty of work to before we get there, though.
And I suppose you actually, with this sort of trained algorithm, you have the ability to also introduce things that don't always make sense in music, like discordance that in certain... You know, often it kind of breaks the rules of musical theory, right, but it works in certain contexts. But because you don't have to teach it the rules, you just say, hey, here's some Nirvana, here's some punk music, here's stuff that sounds like that, figure it out. You can also get this stuff that doesn't really make sense, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely the interesting side. I mean, it's funny because our algorithm trained mostly on classical music or music, and then once we had this piece that slightly sounded Celtic.
Yeah.
So even though we never showed the Celtic music, so it was quite interesting. Maybe it's just us that interpreted the music as being more Celtic, but also because it's more random. I mean, by definition, these algorithms are statistical, so there is some aspect of randomness in it. It could create things that you would not have expected. Just like sometimes humans when people first created jazz, it was almost considered an outrage for the music establishment, but just because it was so different and so against the rules. So it's quite interesting.
But I mean, ignoring the subjectivity and of course, but I mean, music at its core is actually fairly algorithmic. I had an interview with a drummer a few months back where we talked about the correlations between. There's a lot of programmers who are musicians and vice versa. And then there's a lot of programmers who listen to music, and there's actually a lot of correlations between the way your brain works between the two and the principles. I mean, music works on a lot of cycles and naturally kind of occurring algorithms and things like that. That's why things sound right or not.
Oh yeah, for sure. it's
quite fascinating in that way.
I mean, and Bach, I think, said that his music was very mathematical. In general, if you look at film music these days, it's very well encoded. Have a specific if you're watching an action sequence, you're expecting a type of music, and it's almost you're being fed exactly what you're expecting. Yeah. So it's very codified, and
it's true.
It's almost like you're trying to encode some kind of intention. So it's definitely mathematical in a way.
So what if some unexpected outputs been? So I guess question one would be, you fed in some inputs and the result was just, I don't know, completely extreme opposite. I mean, guessing in the early days you probably had a lot of that, but you know, more recently maybe, yeah. You know, just something is just like, this is absolutely nothing like we were expecting. And maybe another sort of unintended output might be you fed in some inspiration and the output basically just was a carbon copy, or, you know.
Right, yeah. So actually the carbon copy case doesn't happen.
Okay.
So we have an algorithm that checks for plagiarism.
Okay.
But usually, unless we overtrain algorithms, it's very unlikely that they will actually copy a piece. So yeah, we haven't seen that happening a lot. But yeah, for the pieces that are a little bit funky and all over the place, no, that still happens.
Yeah.
And there still needs to be some, you know, some human involvement into like listening to the piece and making sure that they're okay. Potentially removing some noise. So yeah, there's still some funky results.
Okay.
But at the same time, you know, if you constrain too much these kind of algorithms, then it can, you know, remove some of the interesting stuff. So so we try to improve them in a way that's we're not imposing just a set of rules, because otherwise it would just produce always the same music and that would be boring.
Sure. Yeah. So Ivor has had an album. I don't really know how to refer. Is it an AI isn't necessarily a collective thing, but Ivor has an album, had an album. Was that the first AI generated album released? Or?
No, it wasn't actually. Okay. Actually, there was a professor in the US called David Cope.
Mm.
He worked. I mean, you could argue it wasn't like the same type of AI that that we talk about today. So nowadays we talk AI means more like neural networks, deep neural networks, machine learning, all these things, and David Cope. Back in his days, I can't exactly remember when he started his first album, but yeah, he didn't use neural networks. So he used, I would say, less advanced techniques, but still advanced at the time.
Yeah.
And he composed with his machine. He composed music in the style of Bach, I think Vivaldi as well. I mean, the various types of classical composers, and the results were interesting.
Okay.
So yeah.
And how well received was Genesis, which is the name of the album?
Right.
Band Genesis, yeah.
Yeah, no, not the band. No, overall, I think it was well received. I mean, you know, there's obviously critics out there that don't believe this is good or don't believe that this is right. But we know we can't please everyone. And in general, when we get to speak to musicians and explain that, you know, we're not trying to, we're not trying to replace them. And even if we wanted to, it's a very hard job because AI is not as easy and or advanced as what the general public thinks it is. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of challenges. For example, in our case, to really improve our algorithms, we need a better sense, a better way to measure the quality of a music. So that's what we're working on. But it's not, you know, it's not the trivial problem to solve. So so yeah, it's not like if we can just snap our fingers and then everybody will be out of the job. So
no.
So once we get to educate people and to show them a little bit about our process, to show them that, you know, musicians are still recording, that we're very interested in more use cases like the personalized music for games as opposed to, replacing their jobs. It's, I think the conversation is a lot more positive.
Yeah.
Also, what we like to do is not to say anything before we show the music. So we show the music to musicians, and they hear it, and then you know, they give their feedback without knowing who composed the music. So usually, people say that it's good music. Some say it could be better, but none in general are able to understand that this is an AI. I think we had only once we had someone who said, well, there's something interesting in this music, but I can't really point my finger on what it is. And then when we said who composed the music, the person was like, yeah, it makes sense. But that only happened once, so.
Okay. A couple more sort of business questions, and I actually want to ask you a question about Luxembourg. So I guess what's your plans for the next 6 months, the next year, but also how do you even go about convincing people that they need your services? It seems probably like it's a reason. Well, I'm not sure. I suppose if you save people money, it's one way of convincing them. But yeah, how do you convince people to actually to use IVA at the moment?
Right. So up till now, we've been working more as a service. So people come to us with music needs, just like they would go to a regular composer. Obviously, we can be a little bit more cheap and flexible in terms of the timing. Definitely more flexible in terms of timing, and in terms of the style of the music we can produce. I mean, soundtrack music is a very vast genre, so we can compose music in the style of any composer, really. So in that sense, that's how we've been working so far. But what we're interested in doing for the next year and then years to come is to really fulfill those use cases that humans alone cannot solve. So one example is the game example with the 2 hours of music produced by humans and then hundreds of hours of gameplay and having this same music loop 50 times over. We want to be able to solve that. And essentially, since there's no other solution on the market, that appeals to game developers, because we're essentially offering something that's an offer that's totally new and that adds value to
and
them.
It makes complete sense.
And makes complete sense. And actually, if you think a little bit deeper, it's not just for games, but also brands who want to have music in their shops.
I was actually just thinking this as you were talking. Like, I used to work in a shopping center years ago, and this kind of, you can actually tailor the ambient music to suit the time of day, to suit the amount of people. Start playing like faster, loud music when you want people to leave and things like that. Yeah, it's actually, and no one wants to make that music. No musician really wants to write that kind of stuff.
and even if they wanted to, it would be like so many hours and they wouldn't be able to be paid well. So I think the only alternative to that right now is sort of stock music. And I don't think that stock music is an industry that actually benefits artists.
No, not well, I don't know. I don't really have any experience, but even my experience of synchronizations has never been as lucrative as you would hope. It's quite fascinating. I think the aspect that you still, apart from the games and the generative aspect, you still need people to play it, sort of makes it less scary. But it's a really interesting technology, it's quite fascinating. But yeah, so I alluded to you're based in Luxembourg. I've met the Luxembourg, I don't know, trade delegation, whatever they called. I can't quite remember. Okay. At a few conferences in Germany and in. I think possibly Web Summit, Mobile Congress. I'm not sure, all these sort of big events around Europe. It's Luxembourg is infamous for a few startup models like blockchain and cryptocurrency, because of sort of financial benefits. You're also sort of quite conveniently located, but small. I mean, what's it like running a startup or a tech company in Luxembourg at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice, it's a small city. So, there's everything you need close by when you're a startup and you don't really have much time to commute or anything. It's a very international place. So it's great for, people joining us from various countries, our employees, because they don't, they can speak English. It's fine. it's not like in the middle of middle of France where people would only mostly speak French. Mm. It's also very well connected to other places. You know, I can take an easy jet or something and be in London in no time. Yeah. The airport is like 10 minutes away from our office, so it's really easy to get somewhere. And in general, it's just a very business friendly place. Luxembourg is very well known for that. So yep, I mean, and also we were living there, so we said, why not? You know?
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's kind of like Switzerland, but it is part of the European Union, isn't it? I think.
Yeah. And so, also it's, I think it's not like, it's not surrounded by mountains.
So no, it's not as controversial as Switzerland. So it can sometimes be as well. I've actually intended to come and have a visit. I sort of almost specialize in writing a lot about, areas you hadn't thought about for startups. So I've mostly gone east and southeast, like Ukraine, Balkans, places like that. But often Luxembourg's been on my list, actually, to come and have a look at. But is there anything we haven't discussed that you want to make sure people know about you or the technology?
I think we covered everything, really. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I will definitely pull into the article a little bit about some of the earlier, was it Jonathan Cope, you said?
David Cope,
you mentioned. David I might Cope. Pull that in a bit as well and have a look at some of the history of things.
I mean, essentially, for as far back as we had computers, mankind tried to make noise with it. So,
I remember back in the day, it wasn't that long ago, but I used to use Amigas. Octomed was a program it's strange, very few people seem to remember it, but it was very advanced for the time because they managed to double the channels you could work with from 4 to 8, somehow, and that included MIDI and recorded audio. And I used to almost program music, like I used to write on the kind of MIDI stave myself, so it sounded very robotic, actually, the music. But it's sometimes, I don't know. It's MIDI is a very old protocol. I think people forget how old it is, and it's changed very little, really.
That's true.
Yeah. But anyway, really interested to speak to you. If I do make it to Luxembourg, maybe I'll come and visit. I can imagine it's probably fairly easy to visit most of the startups in Luxembourg relatively quickly because it's not that big. Yeah. So, thanks very much for your time. It's been great to speak to you.